On this episode of The Flatus Show, number 70A, A Fireman Calls, Fascist Opera, The Emerging Church, and Flickering Faith. This and more. The Flatus Show, starring Kenty and Jose. Welcome to the Flatus Show. Hot tea for me. No tab today, babies. I don't feel like opening up a tab can. I don't feel like drinking anything that is too cold. It's a cold, rainy Sunday here. Welcome to the Flatus Show. This is Kenty. Little Jose's awake. He's lying down, though. He's right here in the room. Hi, Jose. He's looking at me. You can reach me at kenty@theflatusshow.com. That's K-E-N-T-I-E at theflatusshow.com. You can also reach me at flatusshow@gmail.com. And you can reach me by phone at 206-339-JOSE. And that's 206-339-JOSE. That phone number is courtesy of K7.net. If you visit K7.net, you too can get your own phone number and hand it out. And when people call it, the voice message is automatically sent to your inbox in your email. And it's a convenient way of getting messages. So visit K7.net and thank you for that number. Okay. Let's see here. I have some notes. I have my notes. This week is a conversation I had with Joe G last week. And it's in two parts. And it's actually unedited. I didn't take out much. I took out a little bit because Joe requested it. But for the most part, it's as is. So you'll hear it raw, as Training Wreck likes to put it. That's Rebecca Ney of Training Wreck Radio. So let's see here what's new. Okay, when I was in high school, my aunt and uncle had a bowling league they put together every year. And my father had joined it, and then they needed somebody else. And they said, hey, Kenty, do you want to do bowling? I'm like, sure, because I liked bowling. And now, this is real bowling, I'll call it, which is 10-pin bowling with the big pins and the heavy ball with the holes in it. And that's the only kind of bowling I knew at that time. Apparently, most of the world only knows that type of bowling, except for New England, which is sort of in a like Rip Van Winkle time trap, which I'll explain. So I was on a bowling league, and I really loved it. And that's really my sport, bowling, because it's the one I know the best from actual practice. That and miniature golf. I'm a miniature golfer, too. So anyway, last night, Johnny and I were babysitting our nephew and niece. One's in sixth grade, the other one's in second grade. And we went to... We were watching him for several hours. So we took him out to dinner to Friendly's. And Dylan, the kid who ate the crickets, the boy who ate the crickets, we're talking about health and everything, and what's he doing in like school? And he's like, "Oh yeah, we have sex education," and we talk about this, Joe and I, so that's why I'm bringing it up. So he's like, "The teacher said boys have testes," and we all laughed. I thought that was funny. And I thought to myself, well, some girls have testes too, right, Rebecca? So I thought that was, you know, like a... I didn't say anything to the kids. I probably should have. I didn't want to confuse them because they're not going to learn about that. But in real life, you know, just because you have testes doesn't mean you're a boy. Generally, you're a boy, biologically. But anyway, so he goes, we also learned about sex. I'm like, really? And he said, yes, the man puts his... penis in the vagina, and my teacher says penis isn't a bad word and vagina is not a bad word. So we're like, well, you know, what happens? Well, the seed goes in there, and I don't really understand the rest. So I explained it to him, how the alternate ovaries drop an egg each month, and John's like, Mia's at the table, and she's like, I know. So the kids like know sex Well, they know, what they know is how babies are born, that they don't come from cabbage patches, that it takes a man and a woman, that the man supplies the sperm, part of the, you know, the sperm, and the woman has the egg. That's really basically what they know. What they don't know, and John asked, do you learn about STDs? And he's like, no. Oh, like AIDS, Dylan said. I said, yeah, well, there's also hepatitis and gonorrhea and syphilis and crabs and all these other things. And we said, do you use a condom? not him using a condom, but we said, do you learn about that? And he said, no. So all this is at the Friendly's restaurant. It was really kind of fascinating. And I thought to myself, boy, I wish I had kids. If I had gotten my act together earlier in life, I would have adopted kids. I would have made sure that I was making enough money so I could have adopt kids and have them. Because I think it's really precious. It was really fun. It was really neat talking to them, seeing where they're at and where they're coming from. So, sigh. Anyway, we have them to babysit every once in a while, which is probably enough. But so afterwards, we went bowling. This is the first time I've been bowling in New England, and it's candlepin bowling, which is different than 10-pin bowling. Candlepin bowling, first of all, the bowling ball themselves is only about 2.5 pounds and it's smaller. There's no holes. You hold it like a very large softball. The alleys are about the same. I think maybe 10-pin bowling is a longer alley. Possibly, I don't know. It seemed to me that it's a longer alley in 10-pin bowling. What else? The pins are about the same. Each pin is about the same weight as the bowling ball, and they're thin. And you get 300 is the top score, like regular bowling, I'll call it. It's like retarded bowling, which is candlepin. I'm only kidding. Actually, candlepin bowling is much harder to play. The top score is 300 for these games. However, candlepin bowling is very difficult to score. It's very difficult to get strikes and it's really difficult. It's just it handles differently, okay? And so actually, I'm thinking about going back tonight after I'm done the podcast to go bowling some more because I want to learn. I want to do some candlepin bowling. So I'm thinking about maybe joining a league. I really like it. I like it. Go out bowling, find some other people to go bowling. So my score was 114 minus 20 points and plus 5 because it gave me a strike when I really shouldn't have had a strike. There was a problem in our lane. But little Mia had a strike. She just threw the ball down there, and it was a strike. She was like, what? I had a strike? I knocked the ball down at once? I'm like, how the hell did you do that? Another thing with this, and I'm not sure if this happens with regular bowling or 10-pin bowling. At the electronic screen, which keeps your points automatically, it tells you how fast you threw the ball. So I don't know if they do that in regular bowling or not. So, that's that. Okay, Shop Pink. Thank you for making the comment on MySpace. MySpace, visit MySpace. It's Flatus Show. MySpace.com/Flatus Show, I think it is. You can find it. I have links on my show notes. If you come to my webpage at flatusshow.com, you can find the links to MySpace and see what Darren said. Or the other guy from Shop Pink. I'm terrible. You're just, okay, from now on out, you're just going to be both called Darren, okay? I think it's John or James, maybe. Am I right? Darren and James. I should look it up, you know. I'm really terrible with names. But they have a really cool face, like picture for the thing. It's like I don't know. You have to see it. Go come to the Flatus Show, MySpace, and take a look at it. So now, today, I wanted to, where am I? 9 minutes. Okay, this is going to be, this particular podcast is going to be long because the show, the interview with, not the interview, with the conversation with Joe is kind of long. The first half, by the way. The second half I'm going to put out later this week. But anyway, today at church, I had a very scary experience, which I'll tell you about. I went at 9:30. I've been going to their inquiry class, and that's the American Baptist Church. and has a gay minister. And the gay minister, let me give you some backstory. The gay minister was married officially, because you can in Massachusetts. You know, gay people can get married in the eyes of the state in Massachusetts. You know, that's it. Civilly married in the eyes of the state, okay, in Massachusetts. And so him and his partner had been married before in a commitment ceremony, but they got legally, by state, married in Massachusetts recently. Well, there's this some Baptist church in fucking, where the hell was it? Let me go get my notes. Oklahoma, apparently. And they sent emails and said, we're going to disrupt your wedding and do all sorts of things. So when he got married, him, the minister and his partner got married at the church, the Baptist church, and they were expecting these people from Oklahoma. And apparently they never showed up. So today I go to the church and I'm going to inquiry classes. It's the last inquiry class. It's about the church and about the Baptists and about what they do. And so it's 9:30, the class up there, like 10 after 9, because John has gone up to Maine, Portland, Maine. In fact, I just had a phone call from him. He's gone up there for a conference. The Portland Museum of Fine Art, I guess it's called, the museum in Portland, Maine, is really fantastic, has a great collection of American art. So if you're interested in art, you know, and you're interested in American art, and you're near Portland or want to go to Portland, Maine, or will be near Portland, Maine, stop in. And it was $10 entry fee, which is very cheap. Okay, let me get on here. Let's go. That's a little backtracking. But anyway, I had Dunkin' Donuts. I had a croissant and some coffee, half decaf, half regular. And I sat there, right, because the class starts at 9:30, I had 20 minutes, so I'm like, okay, I'll just sit here, read through this book, have my croissant, relax. So I'm sitting there, this guy walks in, and he has on black commando pants, sort of, right, with the, like, they're puffy, and they're, like, black pockets on the sides and stuff, and he had a black shirt, like a black coat. Shirt coat, very militaristic, and this leather hat on. It was like a black leather, not a motorcycle hat or anything like that, like a beret, sort of. Not a beret, but I don't know how to describe it. But it was looked like a circular thing. It wasn't a beret, but it was like that. He takes his hat off and he's like, sits down. Hi, how you doing? He has this southern accent, and I'm like, hi, how you doing? I'm just new in the area. I've just been in here for 4 months. I have a cold. I have to look at my notes here, see what actually he said to me. And he sits down. I'm like, hi, you know, and I look up at him. He's like, I have a cold. I haven't had a cold in 14 years. And I'm like, that's a long time not to have a cold. He goes, I just moved to Massachusetts. I just have to get the antibodies. And then I'll be fine for another 14 years, he says. I'm like, yeah, I guess so. So I'm like, well, where are you from? And he goes, I'm living in Salem. I've been in Salem for 4 months. I'm like, well, where'd you move from? I'm from Oklahoma City, he says. That's the place where people blow up things. And I'm like, that's kind of an odd thing to say, isn't it? So I'm like, yeah. So I was like, well, why'd you move to Massachusetts? He goes, I'm an evangelical. An evangelist, he says. Yeah, ever hear about it? I said, he goes, yeah, well, my daddy is an evangelist too. And evangelist, and he spells it E-V-A-N-G-E-L. Angel, do you ever have angels with wings that don't travel? And I said, yeah, I guess you're right, right? So he's talking. He's continuing to talk to me. And he starts saying, I just wanted to see what the churches are teaching up here, because I had a good teaching at my Bible school when I was a kid, and you have to test the church. I'm thinking, this is weird, right? And then he says, it's all sort of like flowing past me. I wrote down what I could remember. And he said, you know, the shortest scripture is Jesus wept. And then he notices my Paisley tie. And he goes, that's a nice tie. Paisley, that's my name, Paisley, James Paisley. And he says, that's nice. It's a red color. Red, like blood, like it's been dipped in blood. And I'm like, that's nice, right? So then he says, tears. He shows me this handkerchief. It's a black handkerchief with these, like, paisley shapes, tear shapes. He goes, these are tears. Tears from heaven. And Jesus wept. So he wanted to find out what the church was about. That's basically. And I said, well, the church office is over there. And he goes, well, if one of the flock doesn't know what the church is about, how does the pastors know? I'm thinking, Jesus Christ. He gave me the willies. Really gave me the willies. So he went to the church. I'm looking for the deacon, he says. So anyway, there's a deacon, a woman. He probably loved that. The deacon comes over to him and starts talking about him, overhearing their conversation a little bit because he's moved farther away from me. To the office. And I hear him say it was James Paisley. And he has this piece of paper, by the way, which I never got a chance to read, but I'd love to take a look at it. And I probably will never have a chance to take a look at it unless he comes next week. And then I guess, like, I'll ask him if I can look at it. But I probably won't because he scares the bejesus out of me. So it's 9:30 now, and I'm like, oh, I have to get up to my class. So this deacon took James Paisley up the stairs, and I'm behind him. And all I could think of was that this guy has a gun in the back, and he's going to kill the pastor. He's going to kill somebody. He's going to make a statement. Like, this is a, you know, discernment. This is Jesus. This Satan lives here. That's all I could think. And I was thinking, is this because I didn't take my Buse bar this morning? Am I having a panic attack? Or is this, like, you know, some sort of, like, hey, Kenty, call the police. So he stays in this one room. I go past into the other room. So we're right next to each other. He's in this class called, I forget what it's called, about, like, sticky topics, sticky issues for the Christian, right? Like environmentalism and stuff like this, you know, what to do as a Christian. So I'm in my inquiry class, and the guy's trying to explain the way the church is set up and stuff. I could not concentrate for most of the meeting because all I could think of was I'm waiting for the gunshot. I'm thinking, what am I going to do? How am I going to get out of here? How am I going to? There's a woman in there with a wheelchair. How am I going to get her out of there? I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to pick her up and move out that door. And I'm just thinking, and I couldn't concentrate. I'm like looking at the people. I'm just like, finally, the minister comes in to finish up the meeting, and I calmed down a little bit by that point. And then after we all left, I said to the minister, I said, that guy really gave me the creeps. He goes, he gave us all the creeps. Apparently he was in there with his view or whatever his view was, which I can only imagine, this hardline thing. But I scared the shit out of me. And I said to the pastor, I said, you know, I really don't believe in evil, but I don't know. He's a good case for evil. Just something about him, this guy, just gave me the willies. And all I can think of is, Jesus, send him back to Oklahoma City. I don't need him. So anyway, that's that. Just wanted to let you know about my scary morning at church. The sermon and everything was really good. It was about people watching, Jesus people watching, and how I looked at this woman who gave 2 cents of the shrine, and it was actually, she was giving a lot compared to what she made. So if you go to church and you make a lot of money, make sure you give a lot of money, just like that poor old woman did, who gave 2 pennies, probably worth more to her than, you know, $10,000 to Bill Gates. So give. Anyway, antibodies, James Paisley scared the hell out of me. Oh boy. Anyway, on with the show. But first, I always forget to do these things. Steve Webb sent me a promo for him to play. It's for the Lifespring podcast, and this is the promo. So after you listen to it, and if you listen to my podcast, only after you listen to my podcast, go check out Lifespring Family of Podcasts. And he has a plethora of podcasts over there which are fun to listen to and informative, and I like them. So here's his promo.
Curious about the God question? Looking for answers? Wonder what's up with those Christians? Hi, I'm Steve Webb, host of the Lifespring Family of Podcasts, inviting you to check out lifespringpodcast.com. We've got a family of 8 different shows over there, and you're bound to find something you'll really like. If you're curious about the whole God question and you're looking for answers, the original Lifespring is where you'll want to start. Lifespring was the very first Christian podcast not based on church sermons. You'll find great music, conversation, and reasons to believe as we hit you right between the ears with the message of hope, love, and good news. And that's just a start. The other shows are In Touch with God's Character, the Lifespring Weekend Music Show, Lifespring Hymn Stories, A Wing and a Prayer, Lifespring's Your Wedding Your Way, and FastTwitch.tv, a video podcast. As you can see, the Lifespring family of podcasts has lots to offer. Come on by LifespringPodcast.com and check out the shows. I'm Steve Webb, and I'll see you there.
Now, on with my show. Flash, just in. Here, just when I thought I could start the show, I get an email. I was just about to get the show ready, get it ready to set out, to send it out to you guys. And I get this email from a listener. She writes, her name's Jill. Hi, just heard your latest podcast in which you mentioned the Canadian TV series Metropia. This is in regarding to show 69A. It was great to hear it called the greatest Canadian show Americans have never seen, since I was the head writer on the series. We made 90 half-hour episodes and pushed the boundaries whenever we could. Also, tried to make the show fun and funny and addictive television. Unfortunately, the series is only on television in Ontario and not available on DVD. Jill. Well, isn't that special? Jill, if you're listening, thank you for writing. And I'm going to have to get my friend Ninja to put them on DVD for me. Because I really want to see it now. Man. So how's this stuff get on DVD? Push for it, man. If it's the best show. Anyway, now on with the show. Unless I get another late breaking news story. So anyway, enjoy the show. Bye. Why do I? Hey, ready? Why do I keep telling why I'm happy? Never sigh and troubles I forget. Fuck me so. Without the grease, you know it hurts me. Why do I keep telling why I'm happy? Never sigh and troubles I forget. Birdies sing and everything is rosy. Ever since, yes, ever since we met. Fuck me. Let's sing this. Let's do this over. So you can hear what I do. Actually, this will be a good... I'm going to try to do this song, but my listeners will be able to see what I go through. Okay? This is called That's Why I'm in Love, Walter Donaldson song. Why do I keep telling why I'm happy? Never sigh and troubles I forget.
get. Birdie sing, and everything is rosy. Ever since, yes, ever since we met. When the skies were gray, you came my way. That's why I love you. That's why I love you. I learned to smile like sweetheart smile. That's why I love you. Who wouldn't love you? You sweet caress just thrilled me, it seems, and filled my heart with wonderful dreams. Sweet dreams of stars above, and I'm in love. That's why I love you, sweetheart.
Well, there's more, but I think you get the idea. And the struggle I go through.
It's Satan. Satan That's is right. keeping me.
It's Hold right.
On. Hold on. Hello? Hi? This is Kenneth.
Oh, my God.
This? I actually can't talk right now. I'm in the middle of a conversation. Yeah, I already sent off a check for you guys. I haven't sent one, whatever the last time was. The beginning of summer, I think it was. Okay, well, I'm not going to pledge anything on the phone, but I do have your address, and I'll try to send you another check, okay? Thank you. Bye.
Hold on.
Oh my God, it's a pledge call.
Yeah. For the Firemen's Association.
Oh my
some
God,
crap.
They're obnoxious.
They are real. The firemen are really obnoxious.
Yeah, the sheriff group is really tough here. You give them one time and that's it. Every 3 months, every 2 months, they'll call you again.
I know. I mean, it destroys your whole concept of firemen and police fetish, you know?
That's right.
Just not sexy anymore when they keep
it
on
isn't.
Calling you.
It's not. Not when they beg.
Okay, let me put that away. Chip away. Get my tea.
Now, I asked to add you to my contact list. Did you get that?
Yeah, I did, and I said okay. Did it say anything to you? Or?
No, I never got anything back.
Well, what will happen is you'll see my name on your you should see my name, Ken.
Oh, yeah. The Lightest Show podcast is a weekly. Is that it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. But it shouldn't say Steve there. That's what I was trying to change. Steve Webb was online.
Oh, okay. Who is Steve Webb?
He's the guy from the Pod Light. What is it? LifeSpring podcast.
Oh, God. Oh, dear Lord Jesus.
Yeah. He's not really as bad as some of them.
Oh, okay.
Listen to me. I sound terrible. I'm talking about like a race of people. Not a race of people, but bugs. They're not as bad as some of them.
Yeah.
Though I did respond to him. He had well, we can start. Let's start. Okay, let's do something real quick.
Okay.
So I can line up the file.
Okay.
And it will be, let's see, I have 4 minutes on here. And how many minutes on here? Hold on. 3 minutes. Let me write down something because.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Apologize here. Okay, that says 322. 322, and that says 446. So that's me. And this is Joe.
That's correct.
So I can line it up. Okay, so now I'll just say, at the count of three, right?
Okay.
We'll say the word podcast, okay?
Okay.
One, two, three, podcast. Okay. That must be, there's a slight, I don't know, gap.
Delay?
That must be the
the way it is.
How are you?
The phone delay.
How are you? How are you recording this?
Well, I'm recording my voice directly to my computer with Amadeus,
okay.
And I'm recording your portion on my iRiver.
Oh, really?
And so what I'll do is I'll import each one into Amadeus's channel left, channel right, and then line them up.
I see.
And then I can get rid of ums and ahs and stuff independently. You know what I'm saying?
You're right.
So, you know, we both sound intelligent.
I hope.
Yeah.
You're using an Apple, is that correct?
Yep. Yeah.
So is Amadeus a recording software for Apple?
Yep, it is shareware, which I got.
Okay.
To best of my knowledge, it's a guy in Switzerland who is studying to be either a lawyer or a doctor or something, who's not normally like a software programmer.
Right.
And he created Amadeus because he wanted to record music.
I see. Okay.
And so it's a great little program, you know, for the Macintosh. It records perfectly. I've used it, oh my God, millions of hours, seems like, of recording, either operas off the internet or, you know, especially with podcasting, And so I've learned how to, like, you know, finagle my computer so I can record things in real time from the internet. Because I wanted to, see, I knew about these opera broadcasts, but there's no way of directly... There is a way of directly recording them to like an MP3 file.
Right.
But what I had to do is I found out that I could use the audio out on my Mac and then go into an audio in on a USB slot.
Right.
Sort of like make a circuit. And I found out how to do that and record the operas that way in real time. Put up my station or wherever it was in the world and record it, you know. So
right.
So
you can record in real time sounds that come through the internet. Then,
yep,
I see. Yep. Even when you have you have headphones on, you can still record what comes on over the internet with Amadeus.
I could actually, yeah, huh. I could, yeah, I could. In fact, let's see, at one time, I was an opera junkie. I mean, I'm still an opera junkie.
Yeah, you did your Tosca
one weekend.
Thing. You did Tosca.
How'd you like that?
I liked that a lot, actually. And I went to the site where you can download the operas,
mm-hmm.
and I bookmarked those because I want to be able to get those MP3s. I like the fact you used something from the 1930s, right? Was that?
It was 1938 or something. Yeah, Geely.
And it was out of Italy. Is that correct?
Yep, it was the Rome Opera, yeah.
It was the Rome Opera. Now, I'm sorry, just a little aside, do you know that that was done for the fascists?
Really?
Yeah, that was during Mussolini's time.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so you actually got recordings from Italy during when fascism was in power. That's great. And I loved hearing it from the 30s. That was wonderful. I really liked that a lot.
The sound is really good.
Yeah.
Now, that recording that were originally, I believe, on the Cetra label.
Okay.
They were released. You know, they've been around. These recordings have been around forever.
You know,
and I've seen them on various labels and stuff. I don't think any major label has picked them up. But I never really thought about it. You're right. 1938 would have been the height of Mussolini's.
It's the height of fascist
Italy.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely.
Wow. How fashionistable.
Yeah. Who knows? His mistress could have been in the audience for all we know.
Oh, my God. No wonder Scarpia sounded even more evil than he was. But I'll tell you, though, that is one of those operas that wasn't really like... Oh, actually, you know, Puccini loved Mussolini.
I didn't know that.
He was Mussolini's, like, number one fan, so...
Oh, dear.
He's like the Italian of Wagner. Except
yeah,
Wagner
really.
Was dead when, you know, Hitler came to power.
Yeah, so he has an excuse.
He has an excuse, yeah. I didn't know my music was going to be used that way.
Good for, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Puccini did, though.
Yeah.
But, you know, but the Tosca is sort of an anti-fascist, you know, opera when you think about it. You know, it's political, you know.
So. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So I don't understand. I don't understand how Puccini could have, what he was thinking.
Well, maybe he changed his mind after a while. Did he die before?
Maybe.
When did he die, Puccini?
That's a good question. I think he was dead by 1938. In fact, I know he was dead by 1938.
So he liked him earlier on. Yeah, Mussolini was popular when he first started.
Yeah, well, it was in the 20s. Yeah. I think he died. He died after Turandot. He didn't finish Turandot, and that was 1920 whatever. You know?
Okay, so that was when Mussolini was the most popular.
With everybody?
Yeah, popularity-wise, he was the most popular in the beginning.
So then Puccini probably had an excuse.
He had an excuse. A lot of people were sucked in by Mussolini initially.
Okay, well, there you go. So I don't feel so bad about Puccini
there
anymore.
You go. So he's got an excuse, too.
He has an excuse, too. He didn't know.
He didn't know he was going to turn into an asshole.
Yeah, how would he know? He had other issues, like throat cancer to deal
with. That's right.
and finishing Turandot, which he never got to.
That's too bad. Oh, well.
I know. Well, okay. So let's see here. So, yeah, let's talk about Christian crap.
Okay.
What do you think is a Christian? Because, I mean, I'm going to ask you first, okay? What do you think a Christian is? What do you think is the basic definition of a Christian?
Oh, my God. You got to start with that question? We can't talk about Pastor Ted Haggard?
Okay, let's do that.
No, I'll answer the question. Traditionally, being a Christian meant that you believed in the Trinity, you believed that Jesus was the Messiah or is the Messiah, and that he's an incarnation of God, that he died for people's sins, rose again on the third day and ascended into heaven. And you believe that you at least believe that the Bible is inspired by God. That's the traditional. It's like the Nicene Creed and the Apostles' Creed is probably the most basic one. Mm-hmm. That's what a traditional Christian is. I think, though, that being a Christian means that you follow the life and teachings of Jesus as your primary, spiritual or ethical path, and you focus on that. But as to who Jesus is to the individual, it's up to that individual. You could believe he was a great prophet, or you could believe he was an incarnation of God, or to the only incarnation of God. I mean, traditionally Christians have believed that he was the only incarnation of God as well, that he was the truth. But that's changed in the last 100 years. There's a lot of mainstream Christians who don't believe it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So
what percentage do you think of Christians believe in the non-mainstream version of Christianity?
You mean that?
They have the mainstream, which, the fundamentalists sort of take to the, skin of the bone, take it down to the bone and, this is it.
Well, at least about 30, maybe 40% of Christians in the United States identify as evangelical to fundamentalists. Very few people identify themselves as fundamentalist. The fundamentalists identify themselves as evangelical. It's about a third of the Christians. So about two-thirds of the people who identify as Christians are not evangelical. But as to what they believe about Jesus is another story of the mainstream.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. See, my issue with Christianity is I just can't believe in the Trinity.
Uh-huh.
I can say Christ is God's son.
Right.
Because it says that plainly. And I can even believe that he, died, and rose from the dead.
Okay.
But I just can't get into the Trinity, and when I learned about that, actually, this is going to sound crazy,
right?
I went to the Lutheran Church, you know, during my high school years, and then I finally got baptized as an adult.
Okay.
Church was really upset. I wasn't baptized. I was taking communion. But I felt I was a Christian, you know.
Right,
I knew.
Right.
You know, I followed. I listened to – read the Bible, and, you know, I felt – you know, I thought I was a Christian.
Right.
And so I got baptized, and they're, like, talking about the Trinity, and then they're trying to explain it to me. I'm like, no, what? And then when I got baptized, I was just like – I had to say I believed in it, and I really didn't.
Right,
so I was like, what do you think about the Trinity?
Well, firstly, just to back up, there has been a tradition within Christianity where the Trinity was not accepted as a doctrine. There are those are the Unitarians. Those are the traditional Unitarians.
Yeah.
That's why they call themselves Unitarians, because they were not Trinitarians.
Yeah.
Now we've in the United States we've lost that pretty much
a
Christian Unitarianism.
It is. It's true.
It's no longer really. I mean, there are some Christians within Unitarian Universalism, but they're a real small minority.
Yeah.
But Unitarianism as an idea, I think, has become more prominent in mainstream Christianity, not in evangelical Christianity, but in mainstream Christianity. For example, the United Church of Christ, I bet you there are quite a number of people who are actually Unitarian. They're not Trinitarian.
Hmm.
But officially, they're still very Trinitarian as a denomination, the UCC.
Mm-hmm.
As far as what I believe about the Trinity, you know, I've been asked this question a number of times in my life, and it really depends on what day you ask me. There are days that I think that Jesus is God, and then there are days I don't even believe in a God. So, I mean, I fluctuate all over the place.
Mm.
I personally don't, for my own life, I don't think what I believe about Jesus is as important as how much I try to apply. Let me put it this way. What's more important is what I believe as far as what he taught, as opposed to who he was or who he is.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just put it that way. I'm probably more Unitarian than I am Trinitarian, you know, when
mm-hmm.
push comes to shove about that topic. But I understand that other people really experience Jesus as God. And so, you know, I don't find that problematic that people are other people are Trinitarian. What I find problematic is when people say I have to be Trinitarian to follow Jesus. But,
yeah,
you know, that's...
You know, it gives me hope, because I know what you mean by that flip-flopping, sort of each day changes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was reading, I was truly trying to get my, you know, head wrapped around this Trinity idea.
Right.
And I was reading, it was Billy Graham's book, How to Be Born Again.
Right.
I found it for $1. I figured, I can't pass this up.
Sure.
So I was reading it, and, you know, he's describing what it means to be born again, and, like, he was trying to explain the Trinity, and it really made sense to me. I thought, well, you know, maybe he was God, you know, and I'm thinking – and so for a short period of time, I sort of had this, you know, sort of thought, you know, and I'm talking about – this is within the past 4 months, okay?
Right.
You know, oh, it's Trinitarian. That could be. So I do understand that. I have come close to, intellectually accepting it.
Yeah.
But it sort of falls apart on me. So it's sort of a struggle. I mean, if that's supposed to be Christianity, that's my biggest struggle. Now, I've been attending a Baptist church, American Baptist Church here,
right.
in Massachusetts. John's mother goes to it, and she was inviting us because the minister is a gay guy.
Oh.
He was the congregation chose him. They knew he was gay.
Uh huh.
He was out, you know. He was out, and he's actually the only Baptist minister to be—I don't know what they call that when the congregation chooses a minister. You know,
okay,
it's a big thing. It's a name.
He's called. He's been called.
He's been called. Yeah, the congregation has called him.
Uh huh.
Very good, and he's really good. I mean, so I've been going to the assistant minister too. It's a woman. Both of them are excellent. So I've been going every Sunday, and I've been going to their inquiry class to find out what it means to be a Baptist.
Right.
And I was really intrigued about the history of the Baptists and how they really for separation of church and state.
Yeah.
and how what the Southern Baptist Convention is doing is really un-Baptist. Because
yes.
what they're doing is it's like the Catholic Church almost, where they have their doctrine and everything has to go through this main body, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so the autonomy of the congregation has been usurped,
right.
basically.
Right.
And therefore the conscience has been usurped. And that's what's really important about being a Baptist is your own conscience. You read the Bible with your conscience, not with dogma, you know.
Right.
So I thought that was really interesting, and I really like the church and everything, but I don't think I can join them because I really can't say I'm a Trinitarian.
Yeah.
But I'll continue going and giving them my money because I think they do a lot of great things.
That's good. I mean, I think I personally don't have any problems with that. Of course, you know, I was a part of the Quakers for a long time and the liberal branch of Quakers, and I mean, I'm telling you, you could almost believe anything you want, short
wow.
of, you know, I mean, they're really not a Christian organization. I don't see them as Christian anymore. Although at the time I tried to hope and pray and fought for that, for it to maintain its Christian identity and its Christian roots. It's, you know, it's really like Unitarian Universalism. And, in that way, it's broken from its Christian roots, even as a Unitarian idea. Or a universalist idea, it's broken from that. So and that's fine. That's who they are. You know, that's where they're at. Whatever.
But it's, you know, for me, I feel like the pastor was talking about at this church I go to how there are many people who are leaving the Southern Baptist Convention. I mean,
right.
in droves, right?
Uh huh.
But what has happened is they're you know, church they've been going to for all these years has been taken over by the Southern Baptist Convention. And so they've just had enough. So they're breaking away and trying to form new churches under a new sort of Baptist alliance. Apparently Baptists, if they can't agree on anything, they break off to make their own new denomination.
Yep.
So there's like a million of them.
Yep.
But she likened it to the Jews in the desert wandering for 40 years, you know, without
uh-huh.
a home. And that's how I sort of feel, especially the Unitarians. I really wish there was a Unitarian church. And you know, I'd love to know what it was like to go to a real Unitarian church, which was
right.
Christian, but Unitarian.
Right.
Because the Universalist church, I'm sorry, it's just like too namby-pamby for me, you know?
Yeah.
It just doesn't feel like Jesus to me. It doesn't feel like church.
Right, right. Well,
you know?
Well, Unitarian Universalist Association was a combining of two previous Christian denominations.
Yeah, I knew that.
Right. And the Christian Universalist, there are, you know, in the Northeast where you're located, actually, there may be some congregations that are still Christian focused.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that's changed a great deal. I know that there was American Unitarian Association, the UAU, I'm sorry, the U, I'm sorry, AUA, that was trying to revive a more kind of a Christian Unitarianism in the United States. But I don't know. I mean, you could try to do a search online. I haven't followed that organization to see what's happened with it or whatever. But
yeah. American Unitarian Association?
Yeah, American Unitarian Association.
Yeah. I think it'd be really a good thing if this, you know, were to grow. I think that's really American. They were American religious. I don't know. Wasn't all of our forefathers like almost Unitarian?
Yeah,
basically
they were,
Unitarian. Like Thomas Jefferson, he certainly, I think he was Unitarian, especially when he thought about Christ. He didn't think of Christ as God.
Right. He did not believe that Jesus was God. He was, I don't know if he was a Unitarian. He was more of a deist than a Unitarian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he believed in a creative presence or force or deity, but that who was not necessarily actively involved in the history of humanity. I mean, it's just the next step to humanism, basically, to a non-theistic humanism. I mean, he was even more left of Unitarians, actually. Jefferson was.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't understand that, but he was, you know, he was even more liberal than Unitarians, which means that he was even more liberal than mainstream Christianity at the time.
Wow.
He was actually radical in his ideas.
He was closer to Satan than a Unitarian Universalist.
He was actually closer to atheism
Yeah. that's right. That's what I read too.
Yeah. He was very close to atheism.
Yeah. Wow. So, cool.
Yeah. And I think that's true with Benjamin Franklin. I think that's true with George Washington. I mean, those are just those are historical facts, regardless of what dominionists and fundamentalists want to believe. These early forefathers, and a few foremothers for that matter, were Unitarian deists or atheists.
Yeah, you know? You're right.
I mean, that's
They're trying to rewrite history, you know.
Yeah, well, most fundamentalists do.
Yeah, it's their only way of justifying their roots or whatever. And, you know, the thing is, and also, you know, they try to justify their belief in premillennialists.
Yeah, uh-huh.
The premillennialists. I've done a search on that. That idea didn't exist until 1830.
Right.
All that stuff, you know. In fact, I think fundamentalism basically started around that time, from what I gather, you know, reading different things.
Well, yeah, the idea of the world ending soon actually started, I think, in the United States during the 1800s. Fundamentalism didn't start until the 1920s in the United States. But there was what they call the holiness movement, which is a precursor to fundamentalism.
Yeah, that's like a Pentecostal. Precursor to Pentecostalism?
Pentecostalism comes out of holiness, but it eventually became its own movement. Holiness predates Pentecostalism. Holiness movement was about personal salvation, about having a very serious relationship with Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, and about making your life as holy as possible. It was a revival within evangelicalism. And so that is a precursor to Pentecostalism and then fundamentalism. And within the holiness movement, there were there was this notion of the end times coming. And that was the group that really got us started with those ideas.
Yum.
God bless them.
Yeah, get the marshmallows.
Yeah, really. You got to love those end timers, you know.
I know. They're just like full of – well, you know, I listen to all those people. There's Jan Markell, and now I've been listening to this new one, Todd Friel, The Way of the Master. Uh-huh. He and Kirk Cameron and Ray Comfort.
Oh, God.
Do you know them?
Yes, I do.
It's very interesting because what it is – that's very instructive. Tell you how to get into the mind of a fundamentalist. What it is that the way they talk to when they try to save somebody, the questions they use, and they said something very telling. They said, "We have the Ten Commandments, so we know who." How'd they put it? We know who is. It's like we're judging you. It's like how to judge others, and it's like. They come off as sounding holier than thou. At the same time, they're like we're all humans are terrible and scum and deserve the death, deserve to be put in hell by God.
That's right.
And I thought to myself, you know, this is what they're thinking. You know, I'm a terrible person. I'm worse than a murderer, and I deserve to be put into hell, except that I chose Jesus, right?
Exactly.
And somehow Jesus. Well, you know, they accept it, and so they're born again, right?
Yes.
And so this mindset of being so terrible, I wonder what kind of effect that's going to have on people. Now, I know a friend of mine who was born into that, was raised in that kind of environment, had a lot of issues. Because what are you going to get if you're always told you're, like, worse than mud, you know?
Right.
Another thing is they always talk about you have to be born again, right?
Yes.
But how does one know they're born again? You know, to me, if you say you're born again, you've had an experience that you know you've been born again, right?
Right.
And yet the fundamentalists are all against the idea of having an experience. You know what I'm saying? They're all about the word, right?
Okay.
And against feelings and
I see.
You know what I'm saying? An experience. So I always wonder – what they mean by that? Because you know they're trying to save people, and the people are like, well, what are you talking about?
Right. Well, my understanding, firstly, the rest of the Christian church often criticizes evangelicals as well as, and particularly fundamentalists, for this notion of a salvation experience, because it is kind of like a light switch. One day you're damned, and then the next moment you're saved. And so it's, you know, how do you prove that somebody has been saved? That's where a lot of this idea from pietism as well as the holiness movement came from, because people would have these salvation experiences, but then they would go off and just kind of do whatever they were doing anyway. And mm-hmm. so people were saying, well, there has to be the fruits of the Spirit. There's got to be the fruits of Christ being in your life.
Yeah, so I heard that.
So your life will be a particular way. And so that's evidence of the salvation experience. But, you know, it's still a problematic idea that all you need to do to follow Jesus is to have a salvation experience. And, you know, what's the difference between having a salvation experience and then working out your salvation so that it shows that you've been changed, and other Christians who've been just doing that without the salvation experience anyway? Do you see what I mean?
I do.
I mean, so why do you need a salvation experience at that point if you're all working for the same thing in the same way? And so that's been a criticism of evangelicalism and the idea of a salvation experience. Now, the other thing, though, I want to be clear is that not all fundamentalists poo-poo the kind of personal, the personal emotional quality of salvation. Charismatics and Pentecostalists have been influenced by fundamentalism, and they're all about the emotional experience.
Yeah.
I mean, they're heavily into that. So there's kind
I was going to say, I think what is this focus on the non experience,
right,
is really the backbone of this fundamentalist group that is trying to take over the politics in the United States.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I think they're the ones we really have to focus on.
Yeah.
Who are the problem? I have no problem with fundamentalism, really.
Okay.
But I have a problem when, you know, they're trying to take over the United States.
when I got involved with fundamentalism 30 years ago, and I can actually now say that 30 years ago, a lot of the older preachers who were fundamentalists were all about, and I think we talked about this before, they were all about separating oneself from the world. And so you didn't get involved with politics because that was of Satan and it was of the world and it was just a temptation to move away from having a holy, you know, experience with Christ as your Savior. It was really a new breed of younger pastors at the time, and that would be Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell. They were younger guys at that point. They were in their 40s at that time.
Yeah.
And they were the ones who were saying, forget about this. And Oral Roberts, they said, forget about this idea that we should, you know, not be involved with politics. You know, in fact, we should be going into the world and changing the world for Christ. And so they kind of broke with the previous generation around that idea. And so now we are where we're at with that group. But I personally don't see them much different from the fundamentalist Muslims. They're not at all. They say that they're different, but that's because there's a lot of things in place to block them from taking over. If they were to completely take over, it would just be a matter of time before they would start passing all sorts of draconian laws, and it would just be a Christian fascist state, basically.
Yeah. You know, it's very interesting is that I talked to some fundamentalists. They're like, oh, you know, we're all about love and, you know, we're trying to save you. And, you know, it's my duty to tell you that you're doing something wrong and to try to get you on the right path and all this, right? And one of my arguments, like, okay, well, Steve Webb, okay, now I'll tell you right now, he's a nice guy, right?
Right.
And he didn't try to save me at all,
right?
You know, not directly, okay?
Right.
Because he had a show about homosexuality. So I responded. I had my points right. Now he played my response. You know,
uh-huh.
Not all of it, but you know, he answered a certain amount. Then he did a whole other show about homosexuality. He says, "Don't get me wrong. It's love the sinner, don't hate the sin." Because I brought up things like, "Well, what about people who are compelled to
follow the Bible, and they use passages like Leviticus, whatever, to kill homosexuals because they say, well, God says strike them dead.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. And he goes, well, we're all not like that and stuff. But I thought to myself, if somebody made a law, right,
yeah,
to kill homosexuals, I don't think these evangelicals would have any compunction with that. They would vote for it because it's not them killing, it's the state.
Right.
The fundamentalists believe the state is allowed to kill anybody they want, you know?
Yeah, I think that what this generation, a lot of fundamentalists and evangelicals actually included, think that if we pass laws that make homosexuality wrong or adultery wrong, let's say, mm-hmm. which is they were on the books 100 years ago.
Oh yeah.
Okay, we're not going to devolve to a place where people are going to be killed by the state. They would say, oh, that of course that wouldn't happen. But what they don't understand is that there are parts of that community that actually do believe that homosexuals should be killed.
And adulterers.
And adulterers should be killed. They
yep.
really do believe that.
Yeah.
And if they got their way, that is how the country would be. And
yeah.
when people start acting that way, that's no different than what fundamentalist Muslims do in their own countries.
Yeah.
Quite frankly.
Yeah, it's true.
You know.
Yeah, I mean it's a fact, you know. Though what number of these evangelicals are really like that though? You know?
I think the majority are not that way, actually.
Yeah.
But I think they're sympathetic to what some of these more extreme people say. And that's the problem is, you know, when you're sympathetic to people this way, that sometimes gives these more extreme groups more influence. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. No, you're right. You know, it's like that's why Germany fell and, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know. I have hope, though, because I hear that evangelicals themselves are sort of breaking off from one another.
Right.
Like there's going to be there's a green evangelical group. They're involved.
Right.
They're interested in the environment and stuff.
Right.
And there is okay. Did I send you about the message about the Mars Hill Bible Chapel?
No.
With it's one of these big churches. Right.
Right.
It's a mall. They bought a mall. And it's the Mars Hill Bible Church in Michigan. And the pastor is Mark Bell. And he wrote a book called Velvet Jesus.
Oh, okay.
And he was raised, I mean, as a sort of even, he was raised evangelical, right?
Right.
He went to Wheaton College. I think that's a big Bible college out in Illinois.
Yep.
And he has a podcast, so I've been listening to what he has to say, and he really is interesting. He's not like other like evangelicals. And apparently he's part of the emergent church movement.
Oh yes. Okay. Now I know.
Have you heard about that?
Yes, now I know. I was gonna say is he emergent and ding ding ding. Yes. Okay, got it.
Yeah. Because he was going back and he almost came to say that the idea that Jesus was born of a virgin is not very unique, which it's not, because at that time when Jesus was around,
right.
all the different cults in the area, the idea of a virgin birth was not unique.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
It's not a unique idea.
It's not a unique idea. The fact that he rose from the dead is not a unique idea.
Yes.
You know?
Yep.
I mean, if you talk to different, you know, different people who had different religious views at that time, that's, my God too, you know?
Right, right.
And so it's very, very interesting. I find it fascinating. I love his sermons.
Oh, good.
So, you know, Mars Hill Bible Chapel, I recommend the podcast.
Okay, I will have to look into it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good.
You might also want to consider looking into some podcasts from more liberal and progressive Christian preachers just to see what you think about what they have to say, because they may address some of your concerns about Trinitarianism in a way that might be at least of interest or interesting to you. Like there are some interesting United Church of Christ podcast sermons. They're just sermons.
What do you recommend?
I'd have to open up. Wait a minute. I'm going to have to open up my
iTunes. You can send it to me, and then I can add it to the notes. But you said the UCC podcast?
Yeah, there are some UCC podcasts that I listen to, actually. Let me see.
Yeah. Well, I listen to Sister Paula.
Sister Paula.
I love Sister Paula.
She's adorable. I love her. There's Potter's House, UCC.
Potter's House?
Potter's House, yeah. I really like Potter's House.
I'll listen to it. I listen to all various things. I mean, I'm sort of focusing on these biblical ones or evangelical right. or whatever. But, I mean, I have listened to there's some Unitarian podcasts. So I've listened to them. A lot of times, I fail to find anything interesting in them because they don't make any points.
Right.
You know,
right.
they don't make a stand anywhere.
Right. Yes.
A lot of times. Which really bugs me. because like I said, I might listen to these people and they might make a statement. I don't necessarily agree with them.
Right.
But at least they make a point, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think they really are sincere in their beliefs.
Right.
I don't necessarily agree with them. So I'm waiting for a liberal. It's like I'm waiting for any liberal to start talking from their heart and their mind, you know, without, you know, changing every 2 minutes because of politics or the way right. people believe or to be politically correct, you know.
Well, listen to here's a few other you might want to listen to. There's Friends UCC.
Friends, UCC.
UCC, and then there's also a TAB Sermons, which is Progressive Christianity.
Uh-huh.
And then if you want to hear, I know which one you should listen to. Do you want to hear something that is more evangelical, Christian, but is very gay positive?
Sure.
It's called The Cathedral of Hope.
I've seen that, actually.
Yes.
Yeah, it's good?
It's a mega church. Uh-huh. That is gay and lesbian.
Is that part of the MCC?
It used to be part of MCC. They broke from that about 10 years ago, and they just joined the UCC.
Yeah, because, you know, MCC, I used to go to MCC meetings,
uh-huh.
services here.
Right.
And it just always annoyed me because the pastor would talk about anal sex and stuff.
Right,
I was like,
right.
Oh, you know. And everybody's like, oh, it's so great. We're free, gay-friendly. Well, you know, there's more to gay than anal sex.
Right, yeah. The Cathedral of Hope, they will talk about gay and lesbian issues, but they don't go quite that far. But listen, try out some of those podcasts to see what you think. And I think they do make stands. They don't always make stands they're not as declarative as the evangelicals, let me put it that way.
Yeah.
But they do make stands, and I think you would – I personally like that they're not always making a declaration every week, you know, that kind of thing. But
why not make a declaration, even if you change your mind, you know? But at least explore it in a positive, direct way instead of saying, well, there's three things. You can only – you know, these are three things you can choose from. It's like at least – you know what I'm saying? I find that hard to follow when somebody doesn't pinpoint down to something specific.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
No, I don't. I'm sorry.
Okay. That's okay, because sometimes I don't understand what I'm saying.
Okay, good.
So what do you think about the emergent church?
I think the emergent church is the salvation for the evangelical community, quite frankly. I think it's very positive. Some people think it's trendy, and it is somewhat trendy, particularly amongst some of the younger emergent folk. It is trendy. Yes, I agree. But there are some really great ideas that I think can help people within the evangelical community to hold to their faith while also learning how to be embracing and accepting of people who truly differ from them in some substantial ways. And I think it's also a way that within the Christian church there may be some more unity versus fighting, in-house mm-hmm. fighting, so to speak.
Yeah.
Which the fundamentalists, they just like to fight.
Yeah.
You know, they're scrappy.
Right. Yeah. They're scrappy.
They're
scrappy. Scrappy-Doo. Scooby-Doo and Scrappy-Doo.
They're scrappy. And you know, that's how they are. That's, you know, that, and that's unfortunate, but that's who they are.
Yeah. Well, they love war, you know.
They sure do. They like conflict.
Yeah, they really do. I think they want eternal conflict.
They like eternal conflict. Well, they view the world as an eternal conflict. It's good versus evil.
So conflict to war is always good.
That's right. Conflict is always good.
I think it really scares them when there's peace. really or probably really frightens them
I think
when there's no conflict.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because then that means you're accepting something that is of Satan.
Yeah. It's not the end. I don't see Jesus' ass anywhere.
Right.
This is the right. One world religion. This is the one world religion.
This is the one true religion. And this
that's
is
right.
And that's what's going to happen, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they believe in the one world religion, too.
Right.
I mean, but they think that's going to happen, so.
Right. The Antichrist.
The apostasy, is that right? The falling apart of the church?
The apostasy,
or
right. Exactly. Yeah. That's been going on now for about 30 years.
Yeah, yeah. Well, apostasy has been going on longer than that, I think.
Yeah, it's been going on much longer than that.
Some people think it happened right after Jesus died.
Right, the apostasy started that way, yeah.
Yeah, which brings me to a biblical quote, which is really interesting. You know, you ever listen to What the Fuck Was Jesus Doing podcast?
No, I've never heard of that.
He's an evangelical guy. He has he's not in your face, right? He's like, I'm trying to tell you what Jesus is like, not, you know, what the Christians say he is. And
okay.
He actually is going through a divorce and everything. It's very personal, you know.
Okay.
But he was talking about biblical passages, which he's always had a problem with.
Yeah.
And one of them was the one, I don't know where it is exactly, one where Jesus says, I have come to divide.
Right.
I've come to separate fathers from sons and mothers from daughters.
Yes.
So I think to myself, you know, the evangelicals are trying to say there's only one way to Jesus and only one Christianity.
Right.
That's unchristian, because I really think Christ knew that his words were so powerful that there's going to be a different viewpoint.
Right.
You know, everybody's going to look at them differently, and yet it will be right at the same time.
Right, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
That's a very postmodern approach.
Yeah. Yep. So that's my thought. And the fact that the evangelicals are trying to make it in one way, like the Southern Baptist Convention is trying to create this one way of looking at it, maybe that's the one world religion that they're so afraid of, you know? It's themselves.
Yeah. It's themselves, yeah. I mean, they are the very thing that they're afraid of.
Yeah,
they become the very thing that they're most afraid of. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, if there is an Antichrist, he's going to be a fundamentalist Christian.
Yeah, the Southern Baptist Convention.
Yeah, or some megachurch or something. But he's going to be from that community because they have that mindset. They behave in the very way that they feel Antichrist is their authority in. They're top-down authority. They have a very central command. Everyone has to believe the same thing. They have a message of love, but when you actually get to know them, it's actually very demanding of people. And you know, and you can get into trouble very easily within that community.
And shunned.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I have had friends who, you know, have shunned me. You know,
yeah,
I knew them in high school, and then they became born again. And they're like, you know, we can't talk to you,
right? You know? Exactly, because you're of the world now.
Yeah, you're of the world, and you know, get away.
Yeah,
I know it's terrible. It's not very social. The fundamentals are not very social. Let's see, what do we have here? What have we? They're scrappy. They like
they're
war,
scrappy.
And they're not social.
They're antisocial. Yeah, they're authoritarian.
They're authoritarian.
They're absolutely authoritarian.
Yeah. but that's, again, it's not everyone, you know.
It's not everyone.
We can't say it's everyone. I think I just want our listeners to know that's not everybody who's a fundamentalist.
I don't mind tossing out stereotypes at all.
Okay.
but no, seriously, I think with the fundamentalism, it does speak to people, though, on some level. That's a reason why fundamentalist churches grow when atheist associations dwindle, you know. I mean, there's a different quality and experience that people have when they get involved with these kinds of particularly fundamentalist or evangelical communities. It certainly gives you a lot of answers. It gives you lots of answers, and it gives people lots of hope, believe it or not. And it gives people a sense of community and a very vivid experience that they can, you know, hey, I was a part of that myself for 10 years, as you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, it really does speak to something. I know I've gone to atheist or humanist groups, and I've sat there and I thought, where's my pillow so I can fall asleep, you know? And there's a reason why I gravitated to Quakerism for a while, because at least it was experiential, you know? Mm-hmm. You could have an experience in it.
Yeah. It's true. I mean, with these fundamentalists, they are tried and true. They know what everything means in the Bible.
Yes.
And it is a this path. What is it? What do they call the
walk?
The walk to Christ, or the salvation, the plan, the salvation plan.
Oh, right, the salvation plan. Uh-huh.
Yeah. You're right. But what I don't understand is when an atheist becomes a born again Christian. You know, is do you think like okay, Kirk Cameron, right? His testimony is he was an atheist, who became a born again Christian.
Yeah,
he probably really wasn't an atheist.
Yeah, I doubt that he was a true atheist.
He was young too. You know, if you get somebody when they're 17, it's a lot harder to try to save somebody who's 40 too.
I mean, there's a difference between somebody who maybe was raised in a mainstream Christian church, didn't really believe in Jesus all that much, had a period of time, maybe a year, maybe a few years, where they said, "I don't believe in God," and so they think of themselves as being atheists, and being somebody who's a bona fide humanist,
mm-hmm.
who actually believes, thought it out, and has a whole philosophy in life that doesn't include the supernatural and doesn't believe in a supreme being or God. Those are two very different atheists.
That's
right. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
So I tend not to believe somebody when they say that.
Yeah. It just fascinates me.
Now, if Richard Dawkins, you know who Richard Dawkins is?
Oh, my God, yeah. He calls them dims.
Right, yeah. If he...
He's a rude...
If he were to become a born-again Christian, that would be quite a story.
Oh, my God.
But I think the probability of him becoming a born-again Christian is very dim, as he's, you know, it's very, very dim, very slim, right?
Yeah. he really baits them. He's like, stupid, they're this, they're that.
Yeah, they're superstitious.
Yeah.
You're a bunch of jerks. You're a bunch of little kids. He even talks about saving children from this kind of stuff. I mean, you know, save the children he's talking about. And it's like, oh, my God, it's just getting more extreme.
Yeah, I know. I wonder if there's like, you know, if they have salvation plans, like atheist salvation plan. Like, what would it be?
To be freed from religion.
To be freed from religion. You know, they go around trying to save people. We all want to talk about your eternity with you. Okay?
Right.
What do you believe? Well, let me tell you, as an atheist, you're nothing. You're just a pile of atoms, and you're going to go back into the earth.
Right.
That's all there is.
That's all there is. But
that's the salvation plan.
But for somebody like Richard Dawkins, to be fair to him, he sees that as something that's a good thing. That's a good message. You're free You're free from superstition. You don't have to do all that baloney over there. To have a happy life. That's, you know.
You just be good. You don't have to be good, I guess, but.
Well, technically, you don't have to be, but there are good reasons to be kind to each other.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I agree with them in that way. I've these thoughts too. I mean, I think to myself, well, maybe we just die at the end.
Yeah.
At the same time, I've had experiences to think that my consciousness survives, you know, death.
Right,
so.
Right. Yeah.
It flickers. My faith flickers.
So what do you feel about – do you think of yourself as a Christian?
I do, I think. I think I've been – more and more I've been thinking of myself more as a Christian than to say I'm, you know, nothing. You know, since I've been doing this podcast, I've been you know, spouting out faith messages and faith statements and stuff that really try to understand what it is I believe and where, you know, what it is, you know, what kind of and also to try to understand the world around me. So I've sort of insulated myself against, you know, understanding what fundamentalists are because they always frighten me.
Right. Yeah.
And so I don't want to be frightened by that.
You know,
I don't want to be frightened by an idea, you know, and I want to understand in a scientific way. What are the numbers? What are the beliefs? You know, what is important? And how am I going to defend myself, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Because that's the worst thing, you know, to to not really know what you believe yourself.
Right.
You
know? Yes.
And I think that's what people have to do, regardless of their beliefs, whether they're fundamentalists or not. Especially people who don't, who say they're might be religious, but don't really understand what it means. People have to start knowing themselves. You know.
Yeah.
That's what I believe. That's
I agree.
One of my things.
If anything, fundamentalists do draw a line in the sand somewhere. And so, you know, how do you want to respond to that? I feel less frightened by them in general because of my background.
Of course,
Although some of these organizations and the influence they've had on the Bush administration are very disconcerting and I think should be addressed. We should be concerned about that.
Yeah.
Because they can go too far. And they will go too far.
Yeah. You know, they have to be exposed. That's the thing. The media has to expose them, and the media has done nothing to expose them. You know, up here in Boston, they talk about these evangelicals. Oh, they're just a nut group. You know, they're not. Right. You know, they're just nothing. They're crazy. But they really don't expose how far they're in government.
Right.
You know,
right.
And the policies they're making.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Not to mention the money that we're sending to that the public is paying. You know, for these like faith-based organizations.
Right, exactly. Oh, wait a minute. What is this? Oh, for the love of God, you get ads on Skype? I'm sorry.
I didn't know you get ads.
I just got an ad.
No.
Call landlines and mobiles from Skype anywhere in the world by purchasing Skype credit. It just popped up.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, let's continue. I'm sorry.
That's our ad for Skype. You see, we're really paid by Skype. Yeah. It's a Skype ad.
It's a Skype ad. Dink.
Yeah, jeez. Okay, this will be a good point for me. Let me stop recording for a second so I can save the two. Save this, okay?
Okay.
And then we're gonna continue again, okay? Because editing an 80-minute piece of audio takes forever for me to open it up.
I understand.
So give me a minute here. We'll think about what do you think the next thing is we should talk about in religion? Because we talked about the emergent church.
We talked about the emergent church. We talked a little bit about progressive Christianity. Do you want to talk about GLBT stuff and religion?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
You've been listening to The Flake Show. You can reach me at 206-339 Jose, or you can reach me at Kenty@theflatishow.com.